And she says that hope gives us agency to do something about something that we may see as not right in the world. Versus optimism is just saying, well, everything is okay. Versus hope allows us to say, I believe that it can be okay, and this is what I'm going to do about it. And so I love that. Ooh. I love that this book is a book of hope.
Welcome to Tangible Remnants, the podcast that makes adaptive reuse exciting, accessible, and sustainable for every building owner. I'm Nikita Reed, an architect and a champion of reusing existing buildings. I'm excited that you're here, so let's get into it. Welcome back. I am excited to share this episode because while it's not explicitly about adaptive reuse, it is about ways to self-publish and ways of sharing the stories of the work that you're doing with the broader community. Oftentimes, we think that the work that we do will speak for itself and we don't need to market or tell others about it. Unfortunately, that couldn't be further from the truth. Yes, the work needs to be good, but if it's good and no one knows about it, then it's not serving as many people as it could. The work of community building and storytelling is massively important in adaptive reuse work, and it's what inspires others. So today's episode features an interview with Christian Josie as we talk about her new book, Letters to Miss 1000, Words of Wisdom from African American Women Architects, Volume 1. I am so proud of the work that she's done to bring this book to life, and I'm also incredibly excited to be featured in it. In this episode, we cover the importance of mentorship and representation in the field of architecture, her self-publishing journey, the need for storytelling in architecture, and the role of community in supporting diverse voices. In our prep conversations, Christian mentioned that her husband, Josh, was one of her biggest supporters. You'll also hear her talk about her team of three and how she couldn't have completed this project without their support. So shout out to Rachel, her layout designer, and Ochuco, her illustrator. In addition to being the editor, co-author, and curator behind Letters to Miss 1000, Christian is an architect, academic, aspiring poet, mother, and mentor. Her first published poem at age 8 ignited her love for the written word, and her family construction business put the first hammer in her hand, both powerful tools to build a lasting foundation. As an architect at Moody Nolan Inc., which is the largest African-American owned and operated firm in the U.S., her nationally recognized design work requires captivating storytelling to imbue the culture of the communities in which she works. The world of architecture enriches her writing through research papers, national award submissions, articles, and now her debut book. As an academic, she has exhibited research internationally, co-curated gallery exhibitions, fabricated pop-up installations, moderated panel discussions focused on under-resourced populations, and often taken on unconventional projects aiming to redefine the profession. Her work across multiple disciplines demonstrates she is a passionate advocate for creating inclusive environments. Her decade of academic and professional engagement with students and emerging professionals propels her vision for a tangible written mentorship piece that she believes will inspire many generations to come. You can follow Letters to Miss 1000 with hashtag Empowering1000. And of course, check the show notes for this episode for links to the book. Now, before we get into the episode, I wanted to give you a little bit of preface for some of the acronyms that came up in our conversation, just to make sure you don't get lost in the architectural jargon. So, AIA stands for the American Institute of Architects. FAIA stands for a fellow in the American Institute of Architects, and that's the highest level of membership in the institution. And then NOMA stands for the National Organization of Minority Architects. As a quick reminder, if you haven't already, be sure to sign up for our newsletter so you can get building resources, tips, and financial options straight to your inbox. All right, without further ado, please enjoy this conversation between me and Christian Josie. Welcome to the show. I am glad that we are doing this because I know that I'm in a book that is coming out that you've been working on for a while. And so I'd love to, before we jump into the book, talk to me a little bit about your personal history and what got you into writing.
Well, the funny story is this is not my first published work, I guess that you would say. I actually was really into creative writing as a kid. Maya Angelou was my, I don't want to say idol, but I really, really looked up to her. And poetry has always been something close to my heart. And I actually won a poetry contest at the age of 8. I was Maya Angelou. She had like a, you know, in the 90s, they had, you know, the poetry contest, and she held one of her annual ones. And I was really surprised to be selected. And I got to go on stage and I like received a book, and it was great. My parents have the picture still.
Was she actually there as well?
No, she wasn't able. Okay. She wasn't able to attend, but it was, full on assembly. It wasn't just like, here's this letter that says, thanks for entering the contest. But I know actually won, it was selected as one of the winners of the contest. And
that's amazing.
Yeah,
it was. All right, so it's been something that you've been doing for a little while. Have you been doing, or have you done any other publication before, or I guess in between being 8 and now?
I actually have. That's how I learned about the publication company, the On Demand, and got a little bit more familiar with self-publishing. There was a small community, and I think this kind of goes back to a little bit of what you talk about in your letter, being a dabbler. I'm anything design. I'm just like completely honed into, and I'm just very passionate about. So I get conscripted, I guess you could say, about by family members for anything, whether it's party planning, wedding planning, anything in that design realm. And so I actually did a bridal magazine. I was told I published a bridal magazine before this. Like,
wow,
it's in the public realm. It's beautiful. I helped with all the finding all the models with photography, doing all the sets and the staging and the partnerships, and just came out with this fantastic piece that was actually picked up by the Visitors Bureau of that city. And they were really interested in doing a second one. And then I said, hold on a second. I'm working on something else. And so Letters of Miss 1000 is definitely was my next big project after that. It's like, hey, I can do this.
Yeah,
this is, you know, I've gathered over time the skill set to be able to do this with, you know, project photography. I worked a lot in helping with marketing and award submissions for architectural design work. And so the writing, you know, naturally came. It might not have my name on it, right, in that portion of it, but the writing, I've always been great at being able to just kind of for the description, design description specifically in words. So this was a good next step.
Absolutely. And so I'm realizing as we're talking, we know what Letters to Miss 1000 is, but the audience doesn't. So I think we should, why don't you talk a little bit about what Letters to Miss 1000 is, and also weave in a little bit into the impetus of why you wanted to do this book.
Yeah, great. So Letters to Miss 1000 honestly has been something that I feel like there's not a single point of origin. I have been mentoring for over a decade in different...
And mentoring in what specifically?
Mentoring in architecture specifically for over a decade. And I've just really seen how at various levels that you've been able to really connect with people. Mm-hmm. I've went as far as, you know, the Mandela Washington Fellows, we've had them come. These are great scholars from Africa that come into the United States and they look for partners to be able to, I guess, take them under their wing and mentor them in specific subject. Not only that, I've been a capstone advisor at college level, at high school level. I've even been recently, I was one of the jurors for the Young Architects Awards. So I've just, and I also have been the Emerging Professionals co-chair at my firm as well. But the project itself came to me after being a capstone advisor. Even though I had been slowly working on this, I feel like it was always in my heart, knowing that there needed to be not so much a leave behind, but like a tangible mentorship piece.
Right.
That students at every level could take with them. And I had a student one year, and she was just amazing. And she was going into school, going into college for architecture. And at the end of her final review, I wanted to give her something, because it's kind of like a little bit hard. I know that I'm a mom, right? You have your babies, mm-hmm. and they're kind of like, okay, you're going free into the world. But just wanting to have something that they could take with them on their journey. And that's how Letters to Miss 1000 came to be, because there wasn't any resources that I could find readily available to give to these young women that I had been mentoring. And so that project, it just gave me the idea of, well, this is where we are, and this mm-hmm. is where we hope to be. And obviously beyond that, what if we could just write to the future Miss Black Architect?
Right.
And at the same time, I really think that everyone was telling those stories mm-hmm. that may not have been heard before. Something right. that they wish that they could have told to their younger self.
Right. And I love that. And I was very honored when I was asked to be a part of this project. To lay a little bit more context, the book is called Letters to Miss 1000. And the Miss 1000 being the 1000th licensed Black woman architect. And for listeners who are like, well, haven't we already hit that milestone? No, we have not. And so as of, this is March 2025, there's over 100,000 licensed architects in the U.S. There's about 2,500 African-American architects. And I think we're at maybe 560 Black women architects at this point.
It's 632.
632 is even higher. That's great.
Yeah.
But, you know, so we're not quite at 1,000 yet. And so part of the work that Christian's been doing is being able to have licensed Black women architects write letters to whoever will be the 1,000th licensed Black architect in, or licensed Black woman architect specifically. And so I love that that's kind of the goal and the vision. But also I love that it's going to be still there for 1,500, 2,000, like as the numbers keep growing. And so then what was your process as you were deciding who to put in the book? Because there's currently hundreds of us. But then how did you go about filtering out who to put in this volume one?
So to be completely candid, this process was like herding cats. I was very aware when I started, and I was told by a wonderful woman who submitted her letter that you are trying to nail down time with some of the busiest women in the country in our profession.
Yep.
And I just like let that hit me, because at first mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, let's do all FAIA. I think at the time they say it was between 19 and 21. It's like, let's mm-hmm. do all of those. So I reached out to all women FAIA. And then I started to hear more feedback from others about, well, what about those that are emerging? You know, those are that right. are the newly licensed, you know, and I didn't want to omit any voices. And so that's from there, I started to really broaden who I reached out to letters to, obviously using within my own network and the greater network mm-hmm. and partnerships that I've made over the years, and really just try to capture, right, a greater voice, broader spectrum of the profession. And that's why I think that this book is going to be really just so personal to mm-hmm. across generations, every age, every stage, every journey mm-hmm. in our life, because all the stories are unique and different. And I'm excited about it.
Yeah. And I also definitely appreciated the grace that you gave me personally, as I was like, I know I said I was going to get it to you today, but I need another 2 weeks or another week or whatever. I know those deadlines kept on slipping as it was trying to fit it in between the busyness of it all. But I was just so excited to be a part of it, and being able to see kind of the draft copy at NOMA last year, the excitement was even more palatable, where it's like, this is real. Like, this is actually happening. And so I know that you are not a full-time book editor and publisher. So why don't we talk a little bit about how you were able to manage all of this and putting this together while working full-time, while being a mom, while doing all of the things?
Giving myself a lot of grace. That is a great place to start, to be completely honest. I remember starting and I had kind of talked through the idea with a coworker and started reaching out to some of the groups, larger groups, like I said, like the SAIA, our the Strategic Council through AIA and NOMA and those different organizations. And I remember getting to the NOMA conference in 2022, being 6 months pregnant and saying, I'm going to walk away with 100 dedicated letter writers. And I remember thinking, what in the world am I doing? I remember getting on the plane because I only was staying for like a day and a half. So that means I went in one day, stayed for a day and flew out the next day. And it was completely insane. And at the same time, it was also, so this is NOMA Nashville. So this was also at the same time, this was my first conference.
Oh my gosh.
And so I was like, I had no idea what to expect. But, you know, coming out of it, I realized it's just like, this is what I've been missing. This is a community.
Yeah. And NOMA conferences are exactly that. Like, there's nothing like a NOMA conference in the field.
And I will say, I was a little bit motivated because I had to see Kurt and Jonathan do the panel discussion together.
That's fair. Do you want to mention why you needed to see them?
Yes. Because Kurt and Jonathan, they have been my mentors since I started at Moody Nolan almost a decade ago. And they are also the publishing partner of the book. That's means fantastic. That they are helping with marketing and media in alliance with their diversity, equity, inclusion initiatives. And they're also going to help with the book distribution to all colleges and universities with architecture programs.
That's amazing. Oh, I'm so grateful that Moody Nolan is supporting you like this, particularly with this effort and the visibility that it's going to bring to the field. That's so exciting. I'm very, very elated to hear that you have that kind of support from your company. And so then from the conference,
yes,
to then getting it to the book, what was that process?
So from the conference, leaving away with not quite my goal, but close enough, 70. That was great. 70 names and commitments. I felt really confident going forward, going ahead and getting volume one going. And then from there, it was all of the logistics of, okay, I had to set up a platform for submissions. I had to create a website. I'm so grateful for all of the writers released any commissions from the sales of this book so that all of the commissions and all the proceeds of this book can go back into programs like Project Pipeline.
Yes. And Project Pipeline, can you talk a little bit about what that is for those who may not know?
Yes. So that is NOMA's initiative to basically address, I would say, systematic challenges within the profession, whether it's access to the programs, architecture programs, or even just creating alternative paths for the future architects to be able to get into the profession from other degrees, but also introducing architecture to students and at an early age, which I think is amazing.
Yeah. And I love that the proceeds from this book is going to go to that effort, because how amazing would it be if a student who participates in Project Pipeline actually does become Miss 1000? That'd be amazing.
That would. It would be completely full circle, right? It's completely full circle.
Yeah.
Want to learn more about the Unknown Ladies of Architecture? Then I recommend you listen to She Builds Podcast, where we tell the stories of remarkable women who have shaped the design and construction industries.
Hi, I'm Jessica.
I'm Nurjiti.
And I'm Lizzie.
After we graduated from Syracuse University School of Architecture, we set out to learn and share the untold stories of women that traditional school curriculum left out.
One day, there's an announcement on campus that women had been seen wearing, quote, inappropriate clothing. Gasp!
What the heck does that mean?
Yeah, so it turns out that Ruth and her fellow classmates were these women. They had field classes where they're doing welding, forging, and foundry work, and obviously they have to wear jeans to those classes instead of, like, dresses or whatever else.
While Gertie was in school, she wasn't just going to classes, trying to stay alive like some of us. I know that was me in school, just taking it day by day,
yes.
But not Gertie. She became the president of EVIGOL, an honorary association of Cornell women architects.
Of course she did.
These are stories not taught in schools. Women who've molded the world of architecture, construction, and development for over a century.
From Jane Jacobs to Ray Eames, She Builds Podcast explores the legacies of trailblazers. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform.
Let's fill the gaps in history together. All you have to do is follow the link in the show notes and subscribe and be part of a movement to expand industry narratives.
But I do want to talk about also that I think in part of also being, remember I told you about the dabbling, yeah. I'm also a ARE tutor, okay. Like a coach with black spectacles.
And so ARE, by the way, just making sure to level set, is the architecture registration exam. Yeah. So the ARE is the test that people have to take to become licensed architects.
Yes.
Sorry, continue.
You're so great. You're like reminding me consistently, like my great layout and design team remind me, it's like, hey, shouldn't we put some glossary for all these credentials that everyone's getting? Because, yep. You know, if you're not an architect, you have no idea exactly what they're talking about. But I'm also a coach. And so it goes from thinking, okay, let me make sure that I'm the person that I wish I had when I was younger, to being the person that meets people right where they are and in the journey, and just being able to support people in that way. So I really appreciate that this book is not only for the youth, not just our future generations, it's for the generation now, those that are still looking to become licensed, and they're just looking for a little bit of inspiration. They're looking for a little bit of hope. And I feel like I came across an Instagram post on Michelle Obama's page, and she had this woman that came on and talked about the difference between hope and optimism.
Ooh.
And her name is Laurie Santos. And she says that hope gives us agency to do something about something that we may see as not right in the world, versus optimism is just saying, well, everything is okay. Versus hope allows us to say, I believe that it can be okay, and this is what I'm going to do about it. And so I love that. Ooh. I love that this book is a book of hope.
Yes. And I love that. And I love that distinction. Oh, yeah. that's resonating legit. Okay. Wow. Yes. A book of hope. I love that.
And I'm hoping that this book will resonate with a broad audience, that people will see themselves in different stories.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. And like, I think that's one of the things that drew me to wanting to participate and submit a letter to Miss 1000 in this one, was just being able to have a space to tell my story that's different than the podcast and going to probably resonate differently. And it's much more concise. So it's kind of like, you know, it's a couple pages, and then it's kind of in this volume with other Black women architects. I'm just so excited and honored to be included in volume one. And then I think the other piece of it that I would love for you to talk about is also the artwork that is in the books, because it's so cool.
it's so, so cool. It's so amazing. You saw yourself in it. It's just like, it's beautiful. The artwork came from, it's like a little bit secretly, which is like, okay, these are superwomen. So obviously my mind immediately jumped to like comics, you know, like graphic novels, you know, that type of thing. It's like, these are superwomen. I wanted to depict them as such. And then my artist said, okay, well, let's work with that and maybe soften it a little. And he started to talk about how his mother's a botanist.
Oh, okay.
And how this book can be a congratulatory bouquet of flowers given to the next architect. And I completely fell in love with that. I already knew when I selected the artist that graphic novel, that kind of mural-esque art style was what I was looking for. But when that concept came, I was like, that is perfect. That is completely it. So each woman has this unique flower that was either selected by them or representative of something that they've worked a project that they worked on, a mentorship project of their own, or the state that they practice in. And mine is an orchid because it is my favorite flower, but also orchids are specifically able to survive without soil.
Oh.
And so they rely on other plants with their root system to be able to grow. And so you'll read a little bit about that in the introduction, but all of them are supposed to have this like great representation around it, around each other. And so that combination of like the flowers and the beautiful portraits that are in it are very powerful. And I think they're very striking when you open the book. We talked about the cover art as well. And the idea of the reason that the letters to Miss is inside of the 1000 is the idea of redaction and the idea of kind of like uncovering truth.
Yeah.
And so it's like this like hidden gem that people can uncover, and they really can get into the stories and kind of really not just the impetus of the book is what we were talking about, but this like the origin stories of everyone's life and how they came to be.
Knowing more of that context makes me love it even more. Like, that is so dope. That's so cool. Wow. And so, I mean, I think part of this, and so in addition to you taking the time and working to really elevate and telling the story of some of the Black women who are licensed architects, I also love the fact that you are putting it out there. Because I think for a lot of architects in particular, we're not necessarily great at marketing our work in a way that is accessible to the general public. We sometimes have this idea that, oh, the buildings will speak for themselves and we don't have to say anything else about the person behind the building. And so I would love for you to talk a little bit about the kind of the reason for the book in terms of why you wanted to focus on the architects as opposed to just their work, if that makes sense.
I have always believed that architecture is about the people and that they're just an extension of our storytelling. And without those people, you know, what story are we listening to? I feel that it was important to focus on the women themselves because it has more of a personal connection that you get with the work. A lot of women, they speak about some of the work that they do in the book that they have been the architects on, but the stories behind why, you know, that they believe that representation matters, that they believe that they can improve communities.
Right.
And that's something that I have always believed in. And I think as architects, we are some of the greatest storytellers. Not just in marketing our own work, but in making that our piece of work relatable to everyone else. Not everyone can just walk in the building and they get it, but you tell them a story about why you designed the building, why you made this particular material selection. Then they're like, oh, it's like a light bulb gets turned on. And I'm hoping that when readers outside of our profession that they read the book, that they connect with the women and in turn want to learn more about the work that they do and how they can continue to support the work that they do, because everyone in this book is doing amazing work in our profession.
I love that perspective on it. And I think that's going to really resonate with a lot of people, particularly the people who are going to be more curious about the architect than they are just about the building. So thank you for highlighting and elevating us. And so as someone who has been a mentor for over a decade, what are some of your favorite stories or examples that you have from some of the mentees or people you've been working with?
Well, I have to tell you, if you really ever want to be feel seen or you want to really be challenged, go and present to a group of middle school STEM students. And I will never forget this encounter. I walked in to the presentation with a coworker, and the woman came in, wonderful woman of color, probably just amazing teacher. And she automatically assumed that my coworker was the one, that he was the one that was presenting. And he just goes very casually and with a smile, and he says, "Oh, no, I'm just helping bring in the boxes." She's the presenter for today. And I will never forget, she was just like, "Oh my goodness, my daughters are going to be so ashamed of me." She said, for making an assumption. And she like turns to the class, because she had introduced, she's like, "This is why we don't make assumptions. This is why we don't assume. This is our wonderful presenter tour today." And then she is a Black woman architect. And I remember walking up there and just like the pointed questions that these middle schoolers were asking. They were like, "Well, why? Why are there so few Black women architects? You know, why are there so few architects?" And all of these young girls, they came up to me and they wanted to, you know, talk to me more. It's just like, they're just like, their curiosity about the why is just so powerful to me, because it just really goes to show you that representation does matter.
Right.
In their mind, they're growing up in a generation that they can do anything. Right. Yeah. They've never been told otherwise. And so in their mind, they're just like, "But why? That doesn't make sense to us." And I'm hoping that we can all get to that level, because it takes more than just me, more than just you. It takes the entire group. It takes the woman that was able to admit that fault, right? To tell the next generation that this is not how, this is not the assumptions we should make. We should be thinking differently. And I just think that that was just completely great.
Yeah. Oh, and the why question comes up a number of times actually for me as well. When I mention it, or even when I give the stat that I know a couple other women in the profession, I think Tierra Hughes kind of coined it in terms of like, we've sent more people to space than there are licensed Black women architects. And I think that probably still holds true even with the increase in numbers that we've had over the past couple of years. But it's kind of like, that's where the one, representation absolutely matters. But then two, also kind of the systemic history of who's allowed to have access to the education required to be able to sit for the architecture exam. And so it's, you know, I'm hopeful that in 2 decades, the numbers will have caught up more. But, you know, when we think about the fact that civil rights was 60s, a lot of women weren't able to get into the universities that they needed to get into to get the education they needed till the 70s. And so it's like, yeah, there were some before that, but it's still just having to, like, hitting back on the systemic thing that you were talking about earlier. Like, it's process. But I'm glad that the future licensed Black architects, men and women, will be able to have access to this book of flowers of all of these Black women architects. And so I think by the time this episode gets published, the book should be live, available for purchase, maybe?
Yes, it'll be 100% completely live.
Awesome. And so I'll make sure to put links in the show notes so anyone who's interested can go and take a look at the book. And then we'll put links in the show notes also to Moody Nolan, any other things, probably NOMA Project Pipeline as well, so people can get links and access to that. So for this one, I think you chose to self-publish instead of going the traditional publishing route. What was the impetus to that? And were there any barriers to publication that you were looking at or working through, rather?
So it was really amazing. I know that at the most recent NOMA, Pascal invited me to her publication session, and they did touch on some of the big key factors that I was looking at as well. So that's kind of like the upfront cost, right? And then also the creative element of being able to publish what I want, keep, you know, the letters very honest and open without having to worry about, there might be some guidelines for other publishers, you know, trying to find someone that's in alignment with the work that we're trying to do with Letters to Miss 1000. So I chose a self-publishing company because there's a very minimal upfront cost for me. You have your team. So having my team was just an illustrator and a layout design person. So it was a team of three.
Gotcha. But still, like, there's other people helping you with
this.
There's other people
helping me with this, which is I was not a one man show like the magazine. But obviously having artists, finding the artists. So those are different, right? Those are aside. But just publication itself, is there is a lot that goes into just quantity, you know, volumes of work, having to purchase bulk quantity. I didn't want to have to do that to be able to publish it. And that way that took that financial burden from myself. And I was able to focus my personal funds and resources on just, you know, licensing, copyright.
Gotcha.
Forming my own business for the publication, right? I was able to focus those finances on that. So I feel like that's a big barrier in publication, that there's a lot of money that has to go into it in the front end. Mm-hmm. And then the other being making sure that you're aligned, the goals for your publication and the publisher are aligned. And so that's why I chose that publication platform. And I think it's something that is very accessible to a lot of people.
Which platform did you end up going with?
I ended up going with Pichu.
Okay.
Which is a subsidiary of Prodigy, Prodigi. And I really think that they are kind of a tech company that figured out, you know, how to network with printers local in the United States to be able to get a single volume on demand print of anything.
Wow. That's amazing, because usually it's like you have to do a couple runs of it before they'll actually print it on demand. So to do just one anywhere, that's great.
Yes, it's amazing. I think it's like a tool that everyone should have to them. And the nice thing about this is, like I did with the magazine previously, is once you have it, you can shop it out. There's no limitations to that. You can shop it out. You could go to another printer. Once you have it, say, can you do X, Y, and Z? And you can also, not only that, that gives you leverage that you can go to someone that might be interested in your publication. And they say, oh, we really like this. Will you do another one? And we'll pay you to do that. And so it's nice to be able to have that flexibility. And I think that's one of the biggest hurdles, is that there's thousands and thousands of dollars that are sunk in the front end costs, where I wanted to say that mine was probably, I don't know, a quarter or a sixth of what normally people have to put in to publication.
That's fantastic.
And getting stuff out there is important. Publication is important.
Yes. And talk about that a little bit more, because I think especially the physical copy publication is important, not just kind of the digital on the website piece of it.
And I think particularly for this publication, the artwork and that being in print was very important. Mm-hmm. We're architects, we're visual, right? And so having something that you can touch and feel that's tangible is so important. Not that there's anything wrong with digital publication. I just think it's also a conversation starter, right? Okay. So guys, protect yourself. Put some type of legal entity between yourself and your personal property. Make sure you have the proper insurances. Make sure you understand any annual reports that your business requires. I know the BOIR, those are all different. Make sure you have your, set up your EIN number. It's free.
Yeah, it is.
It's online. Takes 2 seconds. Make sure that you understand copyright filing. This is very important. You can pre-publication file, meaning that you don't have to wait until it's published with your ISBN number. If you choose to have one, you can have that in the system and it's ready to go, because that is going to what's going to protect you from any copyright infringement lawsuits. And you need to have that in line before you publish. And then the other thing is, obviously, your investment and your time matters. So make sure that you find a publication platform that is within a feasible financial realm for you personally, and that you're able to have the creative flexibility to publish what you want, because you've put all of that time and effort into creating your publication, your book, sometimes years of effort, and you want to make sure it's the end product that you want.
Thank you so much for listening. Links to amazing resources can be found in the episode's show notes. Special thanks to Sarah Gilberg for allowing me to use snippets of her song Fireflies from her debut album, Other People's Secrets, which, by the way, is available wherever music is sold. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the show. And now that Tangible Remnants is part of the Gable Media Network, you can listen and subscribe to all network partner content at gablemedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. Until next time, remember that historic preservation is a present conversation with our past about our future. We don't inherit the earth from our parents, but we borrow it from our children. So let's make sure we're telling our inclusive history.
I saw the first fireflies of summer, and right then I thought of you. Oh, I could see us catching them and setting them free. Honey, that's what you do. That's what you do to me.